All right, guys. Welcome back to EYL episode 37.
37 in the books.
Yes, yes. So before we start, we have some very exciting news. You know that we are on tour right now.
Yeah.
And we go into all of our major markets all over the country. So we started in L.A.
Shout out to L.A.
Then we went to Brooklyn.
That's home.
And then we went to Atlanta.
That was crazy.
And our most recent stop was Houston.
The craziest of them all so far.
Shout out to Houston, Texas, for sure. So, next up, we are headed to the Windy City.
Chi-town.
Chicago.
What's going on now?
We coming. So, yes, yeah. 9/26. We are coming very shortly. 9/26. So, go to our website. Go to the events tab and register. It's a free network meet and greet. Once again, the purpose of the network and meet and greet is not a seminar. It's not a workshop.
Yeah.
It is an opportunity for you to build with us, but more importantly, build with each other. We're going to bring the whole city out.
Yeah, man.
And yeah, you're going to be able to network and you know, pitch your business ideas and meet your real estate partners.
Yeah, all forms of business come. Yeah, it's really for you to network with people who live in the same place as you. Right, there really is no platform for that. So, network, and when we leave, you still have those connections.
Nah, it's a vibe. Yeah. It's a whole entire vibe. Yeah. But okay. So yeah, Chicago, come out. We have a very exciting episode. Something I'm actually excited about. I'm always excited about episodes, but this is something that I'm actually looking forward to. Yeah. Because
it's very rare we get somebody that's the first of something. Or the biggest at something. This is exciting. This is good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So we got Kika Wise, and she is a legend in her own right because she is the youngest female franchisor in America. Right.
Don't let that go over your head.
So if you don't know what a franchisor is, a franchisor is a franchise owner. But not a franchisee. This is what most people think about franchise business. They think about a franchisee. A franchisee is to say, okay, Subway's is a chain. I buy a Subway. Now I'm a franchisee of Subway. I'm an owner, but off of Subway. Subway is the larger company, right? So the flip side of that coin is to be a franchisor. Is that pronounced it correctly?
You got it.
And that's when you actually own the Subway.
Yeah.
And then people are coming under your umbrella. And they're buying their franchises from you.
You've created the blueprint, and now they're running your blueprint.
People have been asking for the franchise, and we was like, okay, we can get like a Subway owner or something like that. But we figured, why not just get the apple sauce from the apple orchard?
There it is.
And go straight to the sauce.
Yeah, man.
Cut out all the middlemen.
And you should too.
Yes. So, yes. So, first and foremost, thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'll give a quick rundown. So yes, Kika has her own studio. It's called a stretch studio, which is different. We'll talk about. It's not yoga. It's not Pilates. It's something completely different. And she started in New Jersey, and it became massively successful. So when she was thinking about expanding, she thought about different ways to expand, and she settled on the idea of just opening different franchises. And where she's at now is to have 12 franchises all over America. And the goal is to have 65 in a very short period of time. So, okay, now we got that out the way.
Yeah.
So can you give us the backstory on how the stretch studio got started?
Yeah.
Yes, so thank you again. basically, I was going to go back to school to get a master's or open up my own business. Because I had a young son at the time. So I took a poll with friends and family. Should I go back to school or should I open a business? And everyone said, you'll fail. Don't open a business. Most businesses fail,
Never
listen to them.
So I was like, great. Then that's the direction I'm going in because nobody else, they're all afraid to. So I decided to go with that. So I took my last literally $500. And I rented a small room and I printed out some brochures and I just ran with the idea of stretching people.
Can we talk about the $500?
Sure.
Yeah, because it wasn't just 500. And this, especially in our community, we get a tax return. And the first thing we think is what can we buy? What trip are we going on off this? You got your tax return was the $500.
Yes.
And you decided, I'm gonna start a business.
Right, this is the only chance I have.
Crazy.
So yeah, I took it and I started the business. From there, one client at a time, I built my clientele, and it slowly became a business before my eyes. I studied guerrilla marketing for the first year in business. I read several books on how to market with no dollars, creative ways to get clients, and then it started working, and I just grew my clientele.
So where did you start? All right, so you have the $500. You have the idea for stretching. First of all, before we even, what's your background as far as to stretch like people? How did that
So I studied at Montclair State University as a dance major. So I was a professional dancer. I danced in the city, television, film for years. Being an undergrad, we had to take several anatomy courses that were extremely boring. But I took them anyway, had to. And so I took the knowledge that I gained as an undergrad to put towards this concept so it would be a real thing.
So, okay. So what is your process as far as stretching?
It's not typical stretching. It's passive stretching.
Right. So as a dancer, we all know that dancers are the most flexible people. Dancers use gravity to gain flexibility. So essentially, I replaced gravity with a stretch coach, which is the coach that you have that gives you the session. So it's based on the dancer's approach to stretching, the movements, and the coach gently follows the breath pattern of the client to add the stretch. The client's completely limp. They're not holding any muscle groups. So the endorphins flow through the body differently. So it's a whole experience. We're the only studio that follows this process.
And that's the biggest difference between yoga and Pilates, right? That's when muscles are being used.
Your muscles are engaged in yoga and Pilates. They're disengaged when you come to our studio. Most people never truly relax and let go, not even in bed. Some of my clients tell me they sleep like this, balled up. And I'm like, really?
Yeah. Can I just applaud you? Like, I studied physical education.
Oh, sorry.
And I'm a health science major. So right. To go through anatomy and to go through advanced anatomy and to go through physics and still pursue, I applaud.
Thank you.
Like, congratulations. Thank you.
It's a real thing as far as a lot of time people, especially men, especially if you lift weights and stuff, like, you're very unflexible, and that could lead to a lot of problems.
Yes.
Like I used to play basketball, and I went to prep school, and that's the first time I got introduced to yoga.
Okay.
And it was one of the best things that I ever did, because so I was in a yoga class, and I was like the only male. It was like two males, and it was everybody else was like tennis players. I was in there with Maria Sharapova. That's a different story. But in any event,
for another time.
Yeah. But in any event, so you know, it's kind of like a little weird. I'm like 18 years old in a yoga class, but I realized that once I started to really become more flexible, everything became better.
Yeah. Like
people, I don't think people fully understand how the body works, but when you actually are more flexible, you can move better, you can run better, you're quicker, you're on your feet, you lose weight also. It's a whole vibe.
Yes, it is.
So, all right. So you have the 500 and you have the background in dancing and stretching and all that. So what's the first step that you take for the 500? You rent a room out, or?
So I went on Craigslist.
This is real grassroots.
When Craigslist was, you know, a different Craigslist. and I found someone renting a room. It was actually a real estate agent who wanted to share his space. So my rent was $300. He paid the other half, or $200. And I took the rest of the money and I printed out brochures. Those brochures I passed out in the street. I used to stand outside the space and just pass out brochures like stretching, Montclair.
Hand in hand.
Right.
You actually did, is this, I read this, right? So I know. You know what's coming.
Yes.
Because we're 80s babies.
Right.
And we grew up with this character, this green character called Gumby.
Yes.
And I read that you had a Gumby character standing outside.
Yes.
With you?
I went on Amazon. I ordered a Gumby costume.
Oh, you were the Gumby?
No.
Okay.
I was never the Gumby. Yeah, no. I had to maintain some, you
know. All right.
So I hired someone to wear the Gumby costume and pass out brochures while stretching.
That's the street.
That's amazing.
So, all right.
That's guerrilla marketing.
So how quick did it grow?
So when I sold my first package, I made my money back.
The package is 500?
No, it was, I think it was like 650 at the time. Yeah, for of 10 sessions.
Oh, okay.
So in the beginning, it took about a year to develop a baseline of clientele. At the time, I had a part-time job. I was selling furniture. And once I started making more than my paychecks, that's when I completely quit. So it took about a year for that to happen.
So, all right. So at what point do you move out of the room? And at one point, you had the studio, right?
Yes. Yeah, so the real estate agent would not renew my lease because he said I was using the space too much. I guess he thought, here's this crazy girl with an idea. I just want somebody to help me pay my rent.
Yeah.
But I actually built a business out of it.
It was a house? It was in a house?
No, it was in an office.
Okay.
Like an office suite.
Okay.
And so I was forced to find another space.
Okay.
The next space was in the basement of a Turkish restaurant, which I thought was dope because it's bigger. Like I have my own space.
Yeah.
But in the summer, you would smell curry and onions coming through the vents.
That's a good workout.
Right. But it was paradise for me. So that's actually where I built the business into a six-figure business in the basement of a restaurant. So that's when I knew I was onto something.
Yeah, I mean, the health and wellness space is a $1 trillion business. I think they reported, yes, 4.7 billion, trillion, not billion.
It's trillion dollar yeah,
business. Did you know that going into it? You just said, I'm absolutely just doing something that nobody's doing.
You followed your passion. You're passionate about it.
And so my passion was always people and making people feel good through conversation, you know, just vibes, right? But my passion was never, my passion was stretching, but my passion was never business. I never wanted to be an entrepreneur because I didn't want to fail. I equated failing with entrepreneurship, so I avoided it. Mm. But my son was the reason I got into it so that I could spend time with him and be there for his
work-life balance.
Right. So then I started to fall in love with it.
So, all right. So then at what point do you get your own studio?
So after I built the business in the basement of the restaurant,
Turkish restaurant.
Right. And I saw people were still coming, even though it smelled like curry. I knew that I could potentially gain more clientele and cover the cost of a storefront. So I took another leap of faith and I rented the storefront.
How much was your storefront rent?
At the time it was $2,400 a month. Yeah.
A little off topic. Curry. Is that curry? Is it something that everybody uses? Like Jamaicans, Indians?
Cool. Why are you doing that to us?
I know, I'm getting hungry.
Nah, Troy's Jamaican, so you know. He has a special
It's an Indian.
It's like a universal spice.
It's an Indian and Indian cultures for sure.
Okay.
Definitely. I mean, you eat my curry goat. This guy eats
I don't eat goat at all.
You used to. Okay. For those of you that don't know,
yeah,
Rashad is a member of the family, so he gets a plate at my house.
I'm a pescatarian, and I'm on my way to becoming vegan.
Nice.
So we putting all the animals down. But
wow.
I don't judge. All right. Okay, so you have the studio,
mm-hmm,
and then business starts to just really take off for you at that point, right?
Yes.
And then, okay, so when you hit your stride, at what point did you really start to hit your stride where it's like, okay, this is something that is legit?
Right, so after a few years, I was able to get a New York Times article feature story.
How'd you get that?
Through Google.
Don't.
One of the reporters found me online and decided to do a story.
So you said you had the SEO.
SEO.
You mastered that, right?
Yes. Early on.
Can you explain SEO? What does that stand for?
So again? SEO stands for search engine optimization.
Okay.
So you find keywords that you highlight, you pay for, so that your results show up fast on Google.
Mm-hmm.
So being that no one was looking for stretching at the time, I had to pay for words like gym, yoga, massage. And so when people would look for that, boop, we would pop up and they're like, oh, what's this? So that's kind of how we started to develop a following.
How did you
online?
How much did that cost?
It was $300 a month.
Like a company?
A company.
What was the company?
Town Square Interactive.
So that really works, SEO?
It really works. Because
I've seen that before and people.
I still do it.
You still do it?
Yeah. It really. I'll never stop.
Same price?
Yeah. Same price.
Oh wow!
So what's the what?
Yeah, I'm just thinking like
what's
is
the
it
key?
Per word?
Like what's the key to find words that it's not? Because obviously it's like very popular words is like, you know, it's probably a million people using that same word.
Right.
Is it to find words that aren't really so being used that much, or
believe it or not, most small business owners don't use SEO as a tool. So even though you may be looking using the word gym, most gyms are not using it. So it will highlight in your area. Mm. And being that we essentially started the assisted stretching movement, we were able to build our SEO campaign for years before anyone else tried to start using it. So we're like on the top.
Ahead of the race.
Right, ahead of the race. But anyone can still benefit from it. You just have to incorporate those words throughout your entire website. You'll still show up.
Okay. Yeah, this is guerrilla marketing.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you have the studio and business is booming, but then you have a fire, right?
Yes.
All right. The studio burns down and you have to go into the basement of a church.
Yes.
Yeah. But that was a moment for you where you realize, you know what? This isn't about me, right? There was a gentleman that was standing next to you during the fire?
There was a gentleman standing next to me. And as the flames were gone, as the smoke is subsiding, he's like, I just bought a 10-pack of stretching sessions. And all he cared about was his investment. But at that, because in my head, I was like, oh, it burnt down. I'm done. I'm just going to, you know, chill.
Shop
forget being an entrepreneur. I'm done. You know, move to Hawaii, do something else. And at that moment, I was like, wow, I have clients and I have employees. I can't just shut down. So at that moment, I knew this was bigger than just me. So it motivated me on a different level. And that's actually when the New York Times reached out to us when we were in the basement of the church. It's funny how life happens.
Show don't stop.
God's work.
Yeah, show don't stop.
All right. So, okay. So you told us off camera about a book that changed your life, and then you fired yourself. The best thing you ever did was fire yourself.
Yes, yes.
All right. What does that mean, to fire yourself? And how did that help you see the bigger picture?
So it's called The E Myth Revisited, like the letter E. And it teaches you how to fire yourself from the things that you do not enjoy doing in your business so that you can be the creative force behind it and not lose, you know, your light, essentially. A lot of entrepreneurs get burnt out because they try to do everything themselves, mm-hmm. and they're afraid to delegate because they don't trust people. So I basically read the book and I forced myself to do everything that it said chapter by chapter. And my business started making more money as I fired myself, because I would be stretching people, answering the phones, opening the door all at the same time, stretching people. And I see an email comes in. I would love to open it, but I can't because I'm stretching. Mm-hmm. So I just did it and it worked.
But it had dual benefits, right? Because as you fired yourself, right, and had to hire someone new, you had to write down the task for
procedures,
that person, right?
Like, exactly.
Oh, you're the manager. This is what you should be
doing.
This
is what you should do.
Right.
This is what I did.
Long term, that helps you out, because now when it's time to create your own franchise,
exactly,
you've got the business plan.
It's already there.
No, but everything you said with me just really resonates. Like, you, it'll be hard for anybody to understand if they're not an entrepreneur, but you don't trust people. And not no, you don't trust people in a bad way, but it feels like this is your baby.
Right.
And it's like you know what you're doing and you mastered it.
Right.
At least you think you mastered it.
Right.
And it's like you don't really fully feel that somebody else can fulfill that role because they're not you.
Mm-hmm.
And then even if it's going to take you a long time to kind of teach them.
Yes.
So you don't really trust them in that process. And,
right.
But like you said, I mean, the problem with that is that now you're trying to do every single thing yourself. And it gets a point in time when you just can't. It's too much for you to do.
It's impossible. Yep.
And somebody said in my business early on, I heard they said, never do anything that you can pay somebody else to do.
Exactly.
Because there's some things that you can only do.
Right.
But
absolutely.
Everything else can be delegated.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's like, even with us growing as a podcast, that's something that we even have to put in place, as far as like we do this as far as like interviews and stuff like that. But a lot of the other stuff we shouldn't be doing.
Right.
Like, we shouldn't be editing videos. Like, that's not stuff that we can do, somebody else can do.
Right.
But as I said, that's true for any entrepreneur. So but I think the biggest step that stops people from doing that is the financial obligation also, because it's like, okay, it's a leap of faith, because now it's to say, it's bad enough to be an entrepreneur and have money come in, might not come in for yourself, but now you gotta pay somebody else. Now you definitely gotta have money, because you can't tell them I had a bad week. You can't pay. So how does that work? Like, at what point financially did you like, okay, I have enough money, I can do this? Or was that a leap of faith for you also?
That was a leap of faith. For the first month, I took a loss and I was hurt, maybe even 2 months.
I can hear it in your voice.
you hear the pain. Yeah. But you have to go through that until you figure it out. And then once I figured out, okay, this is how much I need to make to cover myself, so I can have money. And one of the other things I did was I always had myself on payroll. A lot of people start off with not paying themselves and they're just paying everybody else, but I still needed a job. So putting yourself on payroll and seeing exactly how much you have to make. So I always set goals for the employees. Like, this is the goal we have to hit, which included, you know, my individual goal.
Pay yourself.
No, we're not playing that game.
That's one of my favorite lines. Pay yourself and owe yourself.
Right. Yeah. And it just works. You got to start slow. So if you hire someone for 1 day a week, like, that's good. You just start slow until you trust the process.
All right. So we got the backstory. So now we're going to go into what I want to hear is the why and how you built the franchise business and all of the details and in and outs behind that. All right, so now we're going to talk about how you built the business as far as to scale it to the next level. Because, okay, it's one thing to have a successful business, right? But it's another thing to actually open a franchise operation. And I guess that's hard to do. That's why you're the youngest one in the country, youngest female in the
Ding.
Country. So, all right, okay.
It's not hard to do. It's hard to figure out don't have any guidance.
I've never met anybody that owned their own franchise. So, like, yeah. Like, yeah. What was the guidance? Like, what was the mentor or the moment that you said, this is what I have to do now?
So, I was really frustrated one day. I don't remember what was frustrating me, but I went to Barnes & Noble's and I Googled the top 5 franchise consulting firms, and I called all 5 to see who would call me back first. Because at that point, I was like, I don't want to open multiple locations.
Well, can you talk about that even before? So, I actually asked you that question. I'm like, what made you say, okay, instead of opening, I want to shop in Newark, I want to shop in Brooklyn, but it's going to be, what made you want to just say, I want to do franchises and have other people?
And I left this out. I did own another location at that point.
Okay.
So I owned 2 locations and I was working on 3, but I was like, I can't handle it on my own.
Why? So why did you feel you couldn't handle it?
I wanted to maintain some free time for my family, for my leisure and for work. So I didn't, there's a lot of business owners who just run around all day long to multiple locations and then burn out at night. But I always wanted to leave time for myself because I feel like that's important. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want the business to overrun me. So I wanted to allow other people to open. And I realized that in the United States, you have to franchise if you allow somebody else to use your logo and your business name.
Can you talk about that? I just found that out. So you can't let somebody else use it unless it's a franchise.
And there's a lot of people who like license their method, their stores, but you actually cannot. You're not supposed to. And if you get caught, it's a big fine. You have to become a franchise if they are following your trademarks, logos, and name.
Your trademark is the Kika method.
Kika Stretch Studios, the Kika method.
Oh, it's a bunch.
Yeah, so I also trademarked most of the trademarks myself. I just sat in front of a computer for hours.
Greatest resource.
Until I figured it out. And so.
Okay. So, all right. So you looked at the consulting firms.
Right.
And what happened at that point?
So the first one that called me back, a guy, Chris Connor, out of Atlanta, Franchise Marketing Systems. And he pitched the whole concept of working with me. Like, I think this could work. I'll be on a flight tomorrow. And I'm like, really? Okay. Mind you, he was the only one that called me back. The other people called me back like 3 days later. I'm like, nah. And so he came, he looked at my studio. He listened to the whole model and he's like, you could definitely do this. He helped franchise Massage Envy and a lot of other big franchises. So, and his price was also like lower than all of the other franchise companies, $15,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Most of them are 20 and up.
And what do you get for that? Like, he sets it up for you?
Sets up the whole franchise model, the FDD.
Okay.
FDD.
All right. So, okay. So he came and then he's the one that set it up for you?
He's the one that pulled the resources out of me, the procedures I had, the strategies, and he helped draft the whole agreement.
So okay. That you said the acronym FDD. What does that stand for again?
Federal Disclosure Document.
And that's what you have to do in order to...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So to open up a franchise, right. You have to do... The first thing you have to do is an FDD.
Right, yes.
Federal Disclosure Document.
Yes, and...
You mm-hmm. do that. You do that with the United States government.
Yes.
And each state has its own thing, or that's national?
It's the same FDD, but each state has its own laws as far as submission. So, like, right. New York, you have to submit your FDD. It has to be approved by the state each year before you can sell a franchise. New Jersey, I can just give you my FDD and have you sign up on the spot. New York, they have to approve it each year.
Mm. New York's always the worst in everything.
Man, California.
Same.
So, all right. So what's in the FDD?
So within the FDD, it's basically like the rule book for the franchise. Like, this is what we're going to do for you. This is your role as a franchisee. This is my role. It basically puts on the table every cost that you could incur with a business like this. It discloses to the franchisee everything they would have to deal with if they decided to join your organization. Every possible element of everything.
How long is it?
So mine is about like 300 pages.
300 pages?
100?
Yes.
And that's what he helped you write that?
Yes. So he has a team of people that helped put it all together.
So how do you... All right. So is it like a set template to say like... Or like, how do you come up with 300 pages of items? Yeah.
Or were you using that when you fired yourself, you had so much writing already built up? Like, what was
I did. So within the FDD, so we do 3 weeks of training for each of the franchisees. So it lists how much time is spent on this topic in training. Like, it spells out the whole training by minutes, 30 minutes on this, 30 minutes on that. It shows you the least possible amount of money you could use to open and the highest. So there's a range. It spells out liability of the franchisor. Like, what are we liable for? What are we not liable for? So once the franchisee reads it, they understand what they're getting themselves into. And once they sign it, you can't say, I didn't tell you, you know, this is going to happen.
So that... The FDD actually is the instruction manual.
Yes. Yes.
You don't have like another one on top of that.
We do. We do.
So what's the other one you have on top?
Oh, wow.
What's the other one you have on top? So there's a reason why. So now we know why you're the youngest one.
So this is a process.
So what's all right. So we got right. The FDD. That's pretty much the whole instruction manual. So what's on top of that?
So the FDD, right, is the... So legally it allows you to sell a business to someone, right? So that's the FDD. Then there's an operations manual. Mm. So that's where all my strategies, concepts, all of my material as far as like how to find staff, it's in the operations manual. So the operations manual is what teaches them what to do. So that's a whole nother document which came hand in hand with the FDD.
And once they sign that document, right?
The FDD, yeah.
They can't deviate from that operational agreement.
No. Right?
Okay.
So how many pages is the operation agreement?
It's about 200.
200 pages. So it's 500 pages altogether.
Yes.
It's, it's like Lord of the Rings book. So, okay. So how long did that take you to put together all of that?
So, I mean, they were prepared to put it together within a month.
A month?
That's but all? I needed more time. So it took me about 4 months.
Okay.
So did you actually write it yourself or you just dictated it to them?
Dictated it to them.
So would you ever suggest somebody can do it themselves?
No. There's some things you don't want
to
do yourself.
You don't have to pay.
One of those things is mess with the law. So you really
get a professional.
Get a professional and do your research, because a lot of people rip people off just to create that document. So you have to do your research so you know what you're getting into.
All right. So now so you have the FDD done.
Yes.
And then you got approved. How long did it take to get approved?
So, like, once it was done, I could sell in many states. Like, once it's done, here you go, Kika. Okay, you want to open in New Jersey? Great.
But, like, do they have to approve it?
No. Oh, unless you go to a state like New York, California. So
you were in Montclair. right? To the first one. So if
in New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Fortunately, right?
Yeah. So like to put one in Brooklyn now.
Yes.
Different.
Right. Okay. Requires the state to approve it. Yeah.
All
right.
Okay. So you have the you have the FDD, then you have the operational agreement. So now you're up and running as far as you can. Now you can have people buy your franchise, right? But that's only half the battle because people have to actually buy your franchise.
Yes.
So what's the process for that? How did you get the word out? How did you get people interested in buying? Like, how did that? How was the first person that brought a franchise? How did that happen?
So I owned a studio in Westfield, Montclair in Westfield. So in Westfield, I had a manager that was so amazing. She was doing better than I could have. And when you see talent like that on your staff, you have to do something about it, mm-hmm. or else they'll leave. They'll find another job. So I knew this position, like she outgrew the position. So I talked to the company I spoke to you guys about, and I was like, how do I open up the first one? Mm-hmm. How do I find people? And they talked about a pizzeria that sold their first one to their manager. They let their manager in. Mm-hmm. It was already up and running. It would be great to start with someone who knows the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I proposed that offer to her and her husband, and she took it. So actually, she became the first franchisee.
Okay.
Yeah. We have a slight franchisee story. Like 12 years ago, we tried to get into a franchise called Coldstone. We said this in an earlier episode, but it was like, yo, we needed $500,000. And we're like in our 20s. And it's
right.
Like, how are we going to do this? But you've created a different method for people who want to get into a franchisee position. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, can you talk about that?
No, I'm not going to talk about it.
that's interesting because, like you said, a lot of franchise, like McDonald's, I think, is the most expensive.
It's like
$1 million
to get
Chick-fil-A
in.
Chick-fil-A, I think, now is like.
Right.
See what y'all did?
Shout out to Homemade.
Right. Oh,
so, all right. So, because it's like a lot of these franchises, like $1 million, $1.5 million.
Yes.
And then you have to, some of the franchises, you have to buy three locations. Like you can't just buy one location. You got to have like $1 million in investable assets, all kinds of stuff. It's not easy to open a franchise.
No.
But your model is different, right?
Yes.
So before we even talk, you have a sliding scale of the price range, right?
Yes.
Anywhere from 30 to 90?
Correct.
Depending on geographic location?
Exactly.
So obviously major markets is more.
Right.
And the smaller market is less.
Exactly.
Because the major market is going to do more business.
Right? Yeah, and the real estate is more.
Yep.
So, all right. So, but you also have a income. Is it income-based?
Income-based financing is what we like to call it.
So can you explain that?
So
you're coining that.
I'm coining
it's
it.
Yours.
Someone write it down,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to trademark that after this.
So basically, like, I started with $500. I had no net worth, right? So if someone offered me something, they wouldn't. And it would prevent me from having the opportunity of what I've done so far. So I kind of had that in my head. Like, just because you have $1 million in assets doesn't mean you're a good business owner. It really takes personality. This is a service business. So you have to have a personality. You have to be able to be likable. So there's a lot of different things that would make you a good franchisee besides assets. So, but assets over,
assets over liabilities.
So shameless you can't plug. Have too many liabilities to get in. But so basically it goes by person, but we look for number one, people who are good with people who, show a healthy relationship with money. So even if you're making, I don't know what, $2,000 a month, I'm exaggerating, but you're still saving for retirement, $5 a month, that shows that you handle money well. And that's the biggest thing that we look for, people who handle money well, because if it's $5 versus $1 million, it doesn't matter because you're gonna handle the business well. So we look at people's income, what they currently do, are they saving, what does their savings look like, how much can they put up front towards the franchise, what has been their work history, what their passion is. We have a whole kind of checklist that we go over and we process it and then we approve them based on that.
So who's we?
So it's myself and I have a team of three other people that help with the franchise company.
And then you said, but you guys can assist with financing too, right?
Yes.
So can you talk about that?
So the franchise fee is $30,000. However, say you have $20,000, usually you would never be able to own a franchise because you don't have enough money. So we might finance that other 10 for you, depending on the situation over time. So the biggest thing is there's a pool of people who are being left out of this whole franchise concept due to financial reasons. So we're making it easier for people who still have potential to get in.
And so, right now you have 12 franchises, right?
Yes.
11 of them are minority owned.
Yes.
Applause for that. And you said that there's a certain demographic of franchisees that you're looking for. Why millennials? What makes them the target audience for you?
It's another loaded question. Why millennials? Well, so millennials have been told by their baby boomer parents, get a good job, work there your whole life, save for retirement, and that's it. You're a good person. However, we know that's not the case nowadays.
We're learning very fast.
Most people, that's why you see, speaking of Mickey D's, right? You see 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds working there because they don't have enough money to live off of. Their retirement plan did not carry them through. So we have these millennials who are getting frustrated within their jobs. They've reached a glass ceiling and they're looking for opportunities, but nothing is there because they're solely relying on their boss supervisor to give them a raise. So what we've started doing is pitching for them to give themselves a raise through franchising. And it's just a pool of people that are looking for a way out. And we've realized these are the people that we want. And we're going to help guide them and show them how to do it.
It's powerful.
Yeah, one of the good things about franchises is that it allows you to. So somebody said, we had a guest and he said, he saw this Chris Senegal. He said that in school, they teach you not to cheat. But in business, you get rewarded for cheating. Not cheating people, but like cheating as far as, you see what somebody else has done and you copy that.
Right.
Right? Like, I should use that word, copying. Not cheating. You get rewarded for copying. Right. You copy somebody's paper in class and you get kicked out of school.
Right.
You copy a business and you become a millionaire.
Right.
So that's what it does. It saves the learning curve. And like you said, I mean, 97% or 95% of businesses fail. So if you already have a successful business, your odds of being successful is a lot higher than just starting out from scratch, right?
Absolutely.
And as you said, I mean, you have 500 pages of a system that's already in place as opposed to just trying to wing it and start yourself.
Right.
And it could be very lucrative too, because you were saying like some of the, your locations like well over six figures, right?
Yes.
So those are all the pros. I did a commercial for you.
Thank you.
We'll send that to you.
So, all right. So what's the revenue model like as far as how do you make money off of the franchise?
Right. So we collect the franchise fees up front or through our income-based financing program. and then we collect royalties each month, 6% royalties off of their gross income. So the benefit of doing a percentage is that it encourages us to make sure they're making money. Because if they don't make money, our 6% is very small. If they're being very lucrative and successful, our 6% is much larger. So we're constantly coaching them and helping them make more. What I like to tell my franchisees is that they'll always make more money than me. Mm-hmm. So it puts them in the mindset of, oh, you're right. Yeah. This is my thing.
Yeah.
And one thing I wanted to say is we look for people who have currently been working for other companies as employees and putting their all into their job, but not getting anywhere. So it's a mindset switch. This is the hardest thing to get them to understand. If you work just as hard for yourself, mm-hmm. you'll make money.
Yeah, it's like what you said, like their success is your success.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So how long is the agreement? How long does that last?
It lasts for 10 years.
So it's a 10-year period?
Yes.
Okay, and then, okay.
So, all right, so, okay. I want to open a franchise. I meet with you. I get approved. It costs $30,000. Let's say I give you $30,000, and then you get some help too, though, right? Like what after that? You said you provide training, what else do you provide?
So that includes 3 weeks of initial training, 10 years of support, and from Monday through Friday, constant support. So
what is the support? Like website support?
Website support, publicity. We provide graphics for the franchisees to use. Mm-hmm. We provide like basically every tool you can think of, with the SEO for their locations.
So they're not going to Staples like you do.
they're not going to Staples. They're much more sophisticated than I ever was. Okay. Right.
And then as your brand grows, obviously too, brand recognition. That's brand another recognition. That's another plus of being a franchise owner. So okay, yes. So now I pay you the $30,000, I get the shop, I'm making $10,000 a month, I give you $600, I keep $9,400, and that's finance. That's how it goes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then for the people that are financed, so the people that don't have all of the money up front that you finance or your company finances, how do they pay you back over the course of time?
So we work out an agreement, 24 months, 32 months, it depends, of whatever the balance is broken up over time. So they would pay that balance and then they would pay the 6%.
Interest added to it?
Of course. Got to do that.
It depends on the situation. Okay. Yes. Okay.
All right. So
that was a good question. So email to find out.
Don't worry, so they're gonna be hitting
you. One thing I always wondered about having like a franchise, like even like a McDonald's who has millions of franchises all over the world, how do you know if somebody's like deviating from, like, you sending spies in there to like check on people? Like, how do you know? Like,
yes,
you might have one.
Short answer.
Really? That's what you're doing?
We send out secret shoppers. We actually just did that to two studios. Oh, yeah. And they were surprised. And also with social media nowadays, you can, like, we spot stuff sometimes, like, bro, why are they wearing a pink shirt when you're supposed to wear a black shirt, you know? Things like that. But we focus, it's like its own little department. We focus on that.
Just making sure that.
Yeah.
So, all right. So what's the process? Is like, okay, you have like, you mess up too many times and you're done?
Yes, that's also in the FDD.
Okay. Three strikes, you're out?
It's basically three strikes. Yeah.
Okay. And then so you strip them of using the name and all that
you
stuff?
Can, yes.
This is important for people to know because it's like I said, I mean, I don't know this stuff. So yeah.
Right.
It's like if you want to start a franchise, it's good information. Like, you know, you got to know everything that you need to know before you go into business because you got to expect every possible case scenario of what could possibly happen.
You have to be the type of person that is okay with running with something that already exists. Right. Yeah. You can make it your own because there's a lot of wiggle room. You can choose who you hire. You can choose business perks that you would give your clients. But you have to be willing to follow an existing model. So if you're the type of person to take something and just completely rip it apart because you just want to do your own thing, then franchising is not for you.
So would you consider a franchise owner as an entrepreneur or a manager?
Good question. Both. Because that's essentially what we're doing. What I do, manage the locations on a higher level to ensure that they're following our systems. So as far as me as the franchisor, I have monthly calls with each studio. I'll fly out a few times per year to like visibly see it. So the biggest thing about my job is making sure it's just like my little studio in Montclair. We're all the same. Because we have clients that travel from state to state and they expect the same experience. And because it's a service business, you know, people are very verbal about if they're dissatisfied. But so far we've been doing a really good job through reviews and things like that on Google. Check it out.
All right. So in the next segment, we're going to go into scaling and how you going to blow this thing out the water. All right, so now we're going to go into the next level of business as far as we explain the whole process of how you got started. Then we explain how you set up the franchises. Now we're going to talk about how you're growing the franchises. But before we go there, so we kind of briefly talked about it, but we didn't really fully go into it. So you have a system in place to hire or to work with minority business owners, right?
Yes.
For your franchise. Is that something that you just do as an eye test, or is that like a system that you have in place to kind of the Rooney Rule in NFL?
Oh yeah, yeah, where they have to interview.
You know, you're familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah, if anybody that's not the NFL, they have to, whenever they're hiring a general manager, right?
Yeah.
They have to pick an African American as one of the candidates. They don't have to hire them?
Anybody, any minority. It could be Hispanic as well.
Okay,
yeah.
A minority as one of the people that they interview.
Yeah.
So, I say that to say, do you have something like that in place, or is it just something like you're just actively looking for?
Yeah, so it's organically grown like that.
Yeah.
Just starting from Instagram and people like, what? She's a franchisor. doing more research into what I'm doing, and they see someone that looks like them. So I think that's what's helped grow it so far. It's just been organic.
Yeah, because it's needed, because this, I forgot the exact percentage, but it's a very low percentage of, I don't even want to use the term minority. I never really liked that word. It's just so broad ranging, and it's not really completely accurate. It's a different conversation for a different day. But it's for African American, right? It's a very low percentage of African American franchisees owners, and especially franchisors.
Yeah, it's like me and two other people,
in the whole country. Yeah. It's like three people in the country.
Yeah.
So it's needed. It's needed. It's something that, because we need more in every area, but especially in this area as well.
So yes.
I think it's a great thing that you're doing. And kudos to you on that.
Thank you.
So, all right. So you have 12 locations right now, right?
Yes.
Where are they located?
So Montclair, Westfield, New Jersey, Morristown, New Jersey, Summit, New Jersey. Do you want me to just say state? Okay. I'm like, nah, it's going to take too long. New Jersey, Florida, Texas, Atlanta, Pennsylvania, and we're working on Nevada and Maryland.
Okay, so you have 12 right now. So your goal is to have 65 by when? 5 years?
5 years.
So how do you grow from 12 to 65?
So far, it's just been word of mouth, and just showing happy people, like success stories. It's important. Like, I never like to sell something that I didn't believe in. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hard on myself, my model, and I'm like, do I believe this? Because if I don't, nobody else will. So when I have a franchisee who's successful and they're making money, then they post about it, and then other people get encouraged by it. So our strategy has just been word of mouth so far.
What type of locations are you looking for, A? And then B, as far as inventory, what is needed to be put into one of your studios? I know you started with a ball and a mat.
Yes.
But I know we've grown since
then. Oh, yes. What type of things? We have a full supply list now.
Yeah. What are the things that you need?
Basic operational equipment, like phones, computers. We have a retail area that consists of, like, we sell CBD products. We have branded material. We have these amazing gel socks that no other studio has, that you put your foot in and it's like squishy gel that has essential oils and things like that. We also have mats that have measuring systems on it. So we track clients' results. So there's another trademark, Kika Stretch Age. Mm-hmm. So when you come in, we'll actually tell you how old you are flexibility-wise.
Ooh. Oh yeah, I did that before.
And we
I
track
did that for
it.
Breathing once. They said I was 65. I was 22. That's when I discovered I had asthma.
Right. And we track it, so we're giving clients measurable results, and that's why they keep coming back. As far as locations, storefront, it could be second floor. The thing is, if you don't have street level visibility, you just have to have visibility in other ways, marketing, online presence. So we teach them how to market and be successful based on their location.
What's the pricing model?
So it ranges from $50 to $90
per session. So you don't do monthly memberships?
We do not do monthly memberships.
So is that the packs?
Gyms.
Why?
Yes.
That's the packs.
Yes.
Why don't you do monthly memberships?
So we work on a package system. So people buy packages of 5 or 10. So that's what we market, pitch.
Why packages as opposed? That's interesting, because every gym that I've been to has always been monthly.
Monthly memberships, right.
And everybody, usually the idea with the monthly subscription is that people don't really cancel monthly things, and it's an ongoing revenue, whereas you might pay a package, it's like one time, then I might not come back until July. So that's interesting. Yes. Why do you think that the package is better than the monthly?
So we've actually done the numbers, like with our competition who does memberships. And so once you sell a membership, once the person cancels, it's done. You lost a customer. But if you sell a package, so we sell a package on their first visit, they come 9 more times feeling like they're just walking in the door, not paying anything. Mm. We show them measurable results in between, and then when it's time to re-up, we're like, look how far you've gone. Would you like to purchase another package? Yes. They become addicted to it. We've done the numbers, and we make more than half. We make double what the studios make when they only solicit memberships.
So
because
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. No.
So I'm thinking in my head, I'm trying to envision this. So when I go in, I have an individual trainer each session that I go.
Yes.
So like if there's, how many customers are you seeing at a time in a day?
So we have, the studios have 3 to 4 rooms. So 3 sessions at a time, maybe it's 2. On good days, it's 4 sessions at a time.
Okay, that makes sense.
Each hour.
So, okay. So psychologically, they pay the $50. It's $50 for how many classes, sessions?
One.
Per session.
So per session.
Oh, per session. Yeah. Okay, so yeah. you pay $250 right. for 10 sessions.
Right.
And you said that they don't feel like they're paying, after they paid up front, psychologically,
yeah.
it's less of a mm-hmm. blow for 10 weeks.
Right.
And as opposed to just paying every single month.
Right. Yeah. And so we've built, like, I built the system on that years ago. And then when the whole membership phase came, I questioned it. But we did surveys with all of our clients, and they're like, nah, I would just cancel it at some point. Mm. So we have the same clients that we've had for the past 8 years.
So, all right. But how regular do people come in?
Once a week.
Okay. So it's not a scheduled thing where I can just come once. If I do 10 sessions, I can come once a month, or
you can schedule it how you want.
Okay, it's flexible.
But we recommend that you come once a week in the beginning.
It's only classes?
It's one-on-one, no classes.
One-on-one? One instructor, one person?
Yes.
So what's the time frame that you have for that?
So we do 25-minute sessions, 45-minute sessions, and 60-minute sessions.
But all day?
All day.
So who is your, obviously you guys are going to grow, like you're set to do this. Who is your direct competition? Who was coming into the space since you've been doing it?
Oh, this is a good story.
Who was in that space before you? Was there anybody?
Yeah, no one was in the space before me. People thought I was crazy, of course, right? So there's a company that actually flew out and approached me when we had the fire to attempt to buy me out. What happened was a big company, they own a cycling studio, Pilates, and they were looking for stretching. So it was me or another company. And so I met with the guy. He was like, oh, blown away. Of course, we signed an NDA, non-disclosure agreement.
Yes.
But I was able to chat with him and get in his mind about what they were looking for as far as like acquiring a company. So basically, the buyout was really low, and they would give you, they called it an owner salary or a founding member salary, and that's all you would get. You would not own the franchise company. They would. So, of course, I declined, and they went with my competitor. So we both started scaling at the same time, and actually that's one of the reasons I did decide to franchise, because I saw they were about to franchise. So I was like, I have to.
Yeah, do you think that the offer was low due to the fact that you're an African-American woman?
I was gonna say, I hope so, because it was so low, like that, I can't imagine. But I have no idea, but the fact that I would not own the franchise is what it was like, I can't just receive a check.
So, okay, how much was it?
$250 a year.
That was the buyout?
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So, this is just very interesting.
Before taxes.
Because, all right, so you're doing one-on-one, right? I've never heard of a gym that does that before. But does that limit you as far as the growth? Because how many people can you actually, how many rooms are running?
Yeah, so each location has like 3 to 4 rooms.
Okay. So, yeah, do you think that have you ever thought about opening it up? Because like yoga, right? And when I go to yoga, it's like 20 people, 30 right. people, 40 people sometimes, like huge. And obviously, the more money, the more people.
Right, the more people.
But obviously, it's better to get one-on-one.
Right.
That's great. So have you ever thought about expanding and having more people in classes, like actual classes?
So we did the classes, and then we would pitch like, oh, try a one-on-one session. And so people from the class would try the one-on-one and never go back to the class. Mm. It was a different experience. So if we have 4 rooms that are fully booked, it's more, if not the same amount of money a huge class would take in.
Because they're paying higher.
Price point is higher.
Higher price point.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's important for people to understand, because you got to know your price points. You got to know, yeah. it's different ways to make money, right? It's yeah. like it's like clothes, right? You can make money if you're Target and you're selling jeans for $5.
Right.
Or you can make money if you're Saks Fifth and you're selling
exactly.
jeans for $500.
Exactly.
You're going to sell less pair of jeans at Saks Fifth, but it's a higher price point.
Exactly.
You're going to sell more pair of jeans at Target, but it's a lower price point.
We let our clients share their packages with friends and family. So the packages run out faster. Mm. That's the whole
so
strategy.
So who's the target customer? Is it like yeah. wealthy people, higher income? Probably higher income people, right?
So we have young athletes whose parents are like A-type personalities who want their kids to be the best.
The best of the best.
The best of the best. So we have 8-year-olds that mm. come. We have busy professionals, millennials, who have great jobs, but their bodies are shutting down. So they come to us, and we have baby boomers. So right now, all the companies are focusing on millennials. How can we engage millennials? I don't know why people are so obsessed with millennials. I'm a millennial. we're cool, but I'm just saying. But people have forgotten baby boomers. So we've captured that audience with our business, and now they're all. What we sell is youth. We sell youth.
Okay. Yeah, and you have something that's measurable. So
yes.
that's important.
So
too.
They like that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's dope. That's dope. So, all right. So, what's next? How can the people contact you if they want to open up a franchise? They want to partner with you? What's the deal? Well, your information.
So, what's next? So, we're working on expanding into other states. We're just trying to have a local Kika Stretch in major communities as a center for people to just feel good. I wish I brought my mat. You're going to have to come after this. But just basically helping to improve people's quality of life. So being that everything is about machinery and technology, we've forgotten the importance of human touch and humans. So we're going to constantly provide a human experience no matter what throughout the time of technology. You can contact me on Instagram. Let me say it real slow. So it's Kika I Am. So KIKAIM. You can email franchise@kikastretchstudios.com for more information. And we're just looking to change lives, really. Closing the gap and just helping people gain generational wealth, starting with us today.
That's dope.
Powerful.
Well, thank you for coming again.
Yes,
Troy.
Thank you for
Troy, you got some housekeeping?
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to give a big shout out to everybody on Patreon. Y'all know that's our Proud to Pay program. We had some new members. Shout out to Patrick, Chad. Shout out to DeMarcus. He joined in at Tier 5. So we're going to be talking to him a few times this month. Shout out to David and Kimberly and Sheffield out in D.C. Chef, we let you in on a few secrets of things that we got coming up. So shout out to you. So patreon.com/earnyourleisure. You can join at any tier you'd like. It's 5 different tiers. And like I said, it's just a way to support the podcast financially so that we can do things like travel to cities and do more of our Hometown Hero series that we recently released. Shout out to everybody that's purchasing our merch. Shout out to guys that asked us for liabilities. That's on our number one shirt. I think I got the podcast shirt. So thank you to everybody that's been supporting.
Yeah, merch. And we got some new merch coming out as well.
Yeah.
And also our YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube, iTunes channel. And LinkedIn. Also, we just got on LinkedIn. So connect with us on LinkedIn. So we are on all social media platforms now, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And the book tip of this week will be the book that changed your life, The E-Myth Revisited. And that's the book that you told us where you started firing yourself.
Yes.
So yeah, check it out. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.